Hey, Connor, today we're going to do something completely different.
Okay, so are we going to do like surreal sketch comedy routines that make people roll around on the floor crying with laughter?
Well, that's every episode, isn't it? But today we're going to do something in audio that is primarily a visual experience.
Okay, let's not let the laws of physics and biology get in the way of innovation, right? But could this be confusing?
I hope not. We thought it could be worth a try. So, dear listener, put on your ear goggles and join us in Cytiva's virtual reality world, where learning is doing, virtually speaking. We started our trip into VR with basic instruction on how to push which buttons on the controllers, the things you hold in your hands.
And where you should stand while wearing the goggles so that you don't fall over or walk into something in the real world.
True. So here is the scenario. We've gone into a lab. It is just us and some equipment, and we're going to learn how to install a flow kit onto an Ecta-ready instrument. We took on the persona of manufacturing operators who wanted to be trained in the hands-on processes.
And our virtual guide, but our real-world killer expert, is Aaron Grieg, the sales development manager for our nucleic acids business in Europe, Middle East, and Africa. And he's been involved in the development of Cytiva's virtual reality since its inception a good couple of years ago.
We hear about people actually holding meetings in the metaverse, and this is kind of the equivalent of being in the metaverse for this kind of training. How common is this going to become? Is this going to become like join me in virtual reality for training rather than coming to a classroom?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing just now is general acceptance, both professionally and into the kind of social sphere, right? What we're finding just now with some of the data that's coming out, this isn't going to be news to anyone, right? Is people who learn by reading, for example, the traditional status quo way of learning is here's a bunch of SOPs. So with this one, your hand's basically going to want to do that.
I'm going from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock. It's interesting. Remember, this is an audio experience now, this whole immersive experience we're trying to describe for people's ears.
So if we grab this spanner, you're kind of guided by almost augmented positioning here, right? So this spanner is going to be showing you exactly where it needs to be placed within the correct valve, and you're going to want to turn that from roughly 4 o'clock anti-clockwise up to about 11 o'clock.
Got it.
And what you've done is you've loosened a nut on the top of what's the pump housing here. So there's one on this side, and then there's one on this side, which will go from 7 o'clock to roughly 1 o'clock.
Okay, so that was on the right side and the left side of an extruding box on our Ecta Ready hardware here. Yeah. Okay, and now I'm going to hang up the wrench.
You must put it back into the correct location. Oh, it needs an extra couple of degrees back there, but I will pop that back for you.
Thank you.
And you'll see here we're able to take this away. So where we're at is, by reading information, we know that the retention rate is extremely low, right? Anyone who is reading a load of SOPs, standard operating procedures, or on the PC, learning about what they're supposed to be doing, the retention rate is between 5 to 10%. So by the time you flick that page over, we know that the majority of that information has not gone in, okay? What we had to do as a company during COVID, for example, was we made the switch from doing everything face-to-face, which was the old way of doing things, to trying to deliver training over Teams, right? So
right.
We weren't allowed to go on customer sites. Everyone had to switch to Teams and Zoom. And we know that retention rate is maybe 30%, right? So it's slightly better than e-learning. You can kind of watch what somebody's doing, and there's roughly 30% information retention doing things through a kind of live demonstration. What we're finding is the best way of doing things, again, no surprise, is face-to-face training, right? One-on-one training on a physical asset, you're clearly going to get the best retention rate. So that's 90% retention plus.
Right.
But you have to have a physical asset. So you basically bog down a $250,000 asset. You can't have manufacturing output. You have to use consumables at great expense, and you have to tie up your resource, especially right. if you're training one-on-one. That takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, and potential manufacturing decrease. With something like VR, the reason why we've gone so close to reality, and hopefully you can at least see this, and maybe we can explain just what the finish is like on the assets that we're working on. We've made this as photorealistic as possible. And the level right. of detail on each of the interactions, on the kind of number of actions, is to be as detailed as possible. And we know that when we know that the gold standard is face-to-face, that you want to be as close to that 90%, 95%, or even 100% information retention.
Right.
By learning by doing in the virtual environment, we know that we can get up to about 80 to 85%
you
information
get this kinetic
retention.
Activity. You're actually participating.
You're learning by doing, right?
This is the first time, and this is funny, so this is the first time I've actually touched an Ecto-Ready piece of hardware, and I'm not even touching it, but my memory is now going to tell me that I have handled this hardware, that I've been touching these valves, and that I have been, you know, opening these safeties and getting this machine ready to accept the single-use tubing. What have you just lifted up there? A small piece of
so
looks
this is
like
the pump lid.
Oh, right? The pump
so
lid.
What
okay.
I can do is I can take things apart. So what we were describing a minute ago, where we took the nuts off
yeah.
using the wrench there, was to
right.
effectively remove this pump, right?
Okay.
So what we'd have to do when we're placing the single-use tube, and this is similar to how a peristaltic pump works. So we've removed this lid, which I don't know if you have enough space, but you can potentially walk over and place on the table to our left. So just over here, you'll see we need to pop that down on the table for a second.
I grabbed that and then put it down on a table on the left. And now I'm looking at all the tubing
me?
As well that is connecting into. Do I hear Connor's voice?
That's Svitri.
Oh, hey, Svitri.
Invite Connor into the room here.
Of course. Let me see if I can invite him just now.
So, what actually happened in that moment is Svitri Magnusson, who works with our global services team, started helping us without actually coming into the virtual reality room. He just kind of teleported in.
Right, because you can have observers plus participants. So remember, we're in a lab with a lovely view of Singapore. It contains an Ecto-Ready instrument, some tables with parts on it, tubing, and a lot of space around us. Physically, Aaron is in Edinburgh, Connor is in Amersham, I'm in Uppsala, Sweden, and so is Svitri. But frankly, it wouldn't matter where any of us is physically. Svitri is looking at us through the software, and he's here to help. Isn't that just wild?
I love that it doesn't matter where you are physically, you just need to be in the right headspace.
Okay. All right. Svitri is not in virtual reality. He's joined mm-hmm. just on his desktop PC, and that allows him to effectively have a standard stabilized platform. So he'll move around the environment using the keys on his PC or his laptop, and he'll be able to record everything that we're saying and doing.
So Dodi is walking, well, Dodi's legless avatar is floating magically towards the the purification system, and she's reaching towards a valve. Aaron is helping her see exactly where it is that she needs to turn, and she's grabbing the valve with her hands, or with her virtual hands, and she's turning it, or attempting to turn it. Oh, there it goes. So it's actually very, very photorealistic in terms of how the hand is being shown, or you can see Dodi's hand actually grabbing onto the valve and opening it. Absolutely, it's not a
and
valve though.
I'm not sure.
What is that piece?
Connor, can you see the pop-up menu on my wrist?
Closing
I'm actually I'm following the instructions on that are popping
yeah.
up from my wrist. This is so simple, and it's what you were talking about earlier, Aaron. It's this kinetic, you know, I'm not just reading the instructions and thinking, okay, that's going to be the next step. I see the instructions and then I physically carry them out. it's actually making me feel like I totally understand this process.
This one's over here, this next step.
Okay.
Physically, I don't know if you can move around, but you just need to effectively pop that into each of the valves. So that's your outlets that you're placing there on the right-hand side of this machine. You're setting them into the valve and now locking them in place. Perfect.
Now I'm on step 9, push the UV sensor in completely.
So this one's round on the front again.
There it is.
This blue area. That's it.
Push.
Place the tubing over to you. So this is the joy of working as a team, having someone else in the room, as you can effectively pass things across to each other, which makes a big difference.
Sure.
So when we talked about kind of levels of detail, this kind of illustrates exactly what we're trying to do here, right? So these are tiny little O-rings. I think these are 25 millimeters in diameter. And obviously, if you haven't seen one before, you can see they are relatively small. And the level of detail we're able to go to allows you to insert that into the pump tubing on the main part of the flow kit, right? So that's it. You want to pop it there. And now what you need to do is just take this part, which I might be able to grab it for you.
And twist. Oh my goodness, I feel like I'm looking into your brain.
Because we're in virtual reality. Okay.
I'm grabbing that.
So this one will be connected to this receptor here.
Do you know, this is like threading my sewing machine. I sew a lot, and I feel like I am successfully threading my overlock sewing machine because there are lots of little things that have to go into special little slots.
The realism of you picking things up and grasping them and attaching them to the various parts, and there's even sound effects that make it feel that you've
complete
installed things in the right place. And I'm currently literally on my knees looking at the very underside of an Ector Ready. And for me, what's really quite exciting is I can actually get right up to the device and I can read the labeling on the side of the device. And it's extraordinary. I mean, the attention to detail here, the reflective capabilities of the rendering, it's just, I'm not sure I really want to leave, Dodie.
This is what we're doing in VR. Basically, what we want to do is where we can add the most value to customers is in the very standard, very easy to replicate processes, right? So we've effectively taken all the manual interactions on a flow kit installation and we digitize them as much as possible. With things like applying lubricant to the back of that part before you place it in, that's where we would still expect face-to-face training to be the best value giver. It's because there is going to be nuance in that, right? Applying a layer of Vaseline, you really need to understand how much you're putting on there, how much does it actually feel like. So that's more of a kind of just a written cue to say this is what's going to happen in real world. What we effectively want to achieve inside this kind of training, or putting this kind of training in place in between reading a manual and then the face-to-face training, is we can effectively remove the white noise of somebody's training experience on Ector Ready. So you're going to take a cohort of, say, 5 people who have never seen an Ector Ready before. They've just been hired into the company. You want to get them as operational as quickly as possible when you own that company. And what we found is we would send a Cytiva subject matter expert, an SME, on site, and that would take them roughly 2.5 days. So just to let you know what's happening here, Dodie, Connor has skipped a few steps. So you were about to calibrate a pH probe.
Sorry, me skipping steps, making Dodie skip
We're
steps.
A group here.
Oh, yes,
we're
you are. Wow, I went from 15 to 20. That's awesome. This is teamwork. And I think it's great to kind of learn about it as a tool. And even you were talking about the science behind how we learn and how the involvement here gets, and did you say 85% of people remember what they've learned because they're actually doing, as opposed to the 20% or less when they're reading?
That's it. So when I refer to information retention, it's 85% of the information itself rather than 85% of people, right? So I will also grab a seat so we can sit down in this room. It depends on whether you want to go and sit, but we can actually sit at these tables. And we can also meet in Malibu in a boardroom as well. So the room that
let's go to the boardroom in Malibu. All right, how do we get there?
So, Savitri, are you with Dottie? You can help Dottie out getting there. And Connor, yes? I think you've been there already. So I think when you press your real world one button, so if you peek underneath your headset, Connor, you should see three little lines on the controller, on the mm-hmm. left-hand controller.
What happened next is distinctly human. We agreed to go to a virtual room and then kind of left without clarifying who would open that meeting room and how we would get there and whether we had a map or anything like that. Eventually, however, we all found our avatars, and that's what sparked this conversation.
Aaron joined me in my Malibu.
Right.
But how does that kind of sort of etiquette pan out? Because this is certainly going to be something I think that's important for people to start to understand, is that while the rules of physics apply exactly in here as they do out there, how exactly do the rules of social etiquette apply? I mean, if somebody comes up behind
this question, Connor.
Am I supposed to be upset?
Right.
Well, almost 40 years ago, on a beach not unlike this one, I was studying exactly this question. What are the rules of social etiquette in a hypothetical virtual reality? And suddenly I find myself in, and of course,
and asking the same question. What have you learned in 40 years? Anyway, Aaron, what's the answer?
So I feel like because everything has been very digital for the last couple of years at least, right? I think social etiquette around digital meetings has probably evolved faster in the last 2 years than it has for the last 40. But you can see what it was like, right? It's like leaving a Teams meeting and saying, oh, we'll all meet in a new room. And then everyone goes out and creates their own meetings in Zoom or in Teams, right? So it's effectively exactly the same.
Or this guy moving from chair to chair to chair. Is that good digital etiquette? I think not, Connor.
I don't think it is. And I was trying to establish which is the best view. And I do this in the real world when I walk into a meeting room. I look around and I say, where am I going to get the best view? And I'm not sure whether I want to look south along the Malibu coast or whether I want to sit next to Aaron and look north along the Malibu coast. I think this is a nice view because I can also see you, Dodie. I'm sat right next to Aaron there.
So anyway, Aaron, do you find that you run into these kinds of conflicts as you are teaching people virtual reality, and that you have to establish ground rules or rules of, you know, certainly it's absolutely fair. Is I created a room called Malibu. You two already knew about a room called Malibu. So really, I was the one left out of the party is how I see that.
So I think I was given the advantage of Connor's room, I think, was created first. So I saw that one and I jumped in there, assuming that we would all end up there at some point. But yeah, you went to the extra effort to actually name it Malibu, right? So there was extra points there. But yeah, I mean, it's very much like us saying to each other, let's meet in a Teams call, and no one set an actual invitation or anything to the calendar. And so we all go, great. And we hang up the phone and then we actually dial into three individual calls, right? So it's kind of the same concept there. The difference is, as soon as you enter any of the menus in virtual reality, because we are all within the same kind of friend group on the software, we can all see where each person is. So it's quite easy to rectify, but considering the amount of time you guys have spent in this virtual tool has probably been certainly less than an hour. I think from my perspective, Connor is now sat on Dottie's knee. So this is a very different way to host
the meeting. And I can't see him. He's too close, so I can't even see Connor, but I'm going to report you.
Looks like this over here.
Now you're on Aaron's knee.
So the reason I did that, Aaron, is one of the questions that comes to my mind is, how much does the virtual get in the way of the reality, if you see what I mean. So there's all sorts of things that you can do in this space that you can't do in the real world. And obviously there's an element of people getting used to it, and it's fun to begin with and so on. But how much do you do the sort of, well, what you might call the game physics here of the virtual world get in the way of the learning and people getting used to, you know, the task at hand and staying on task? Because I'm certainly very distracted, albeit it's the first time I've been in here. What's the dynamic there, and what's been your experience with users?
Yeah, so we've taken this to exhibitions, for example, right? When you take this to a customer site, it's different to an exhibition, but the exhibition is where the chaos kind of happens, right? So you take two people mm-hmm. that are already in a kind of different environment than they're used to. They're certainly not on site, so people behave certainly differently at exhibitions than they would on site. But you put two people mm-hmm. into the same environment, like we are in or were in earlier, in front of the ACTA, and you expect them to follow the instructions either from a digital person who's in there explaining to them what to do, or certainly to somebody who's on the booth. But what you quite often see is it just descending a little bit into chaos for the first 5 minutes or so, because they figure out they can teleport, or they can pretend to throw things, or they can, you know, interact with each other in a different way that you can't in the physical realm. But when this is framed as a training exercise, exactly, it's good though, right? It's something that it breaks down that nervousness of, like, is this tool going to be useful? Mm-hmm. Am I going to enjoy it? Do I like it or not like it?
Play, don't we? You know, a lot of that is the learning through play and understanding the limits of what a tool can do. You know, what children do with, and what I still do with any new technology, very often is kind of try and take it apart and then put it back together again. But essentially that kind of playing with the limits of what it is. And I think that's very, it feels very much like sort of the when you're very familiar with a video game and you try to go to the edges and see what's behind the walls and whether or not there's Easter eggs hidden. And can we agree to not add a certain thing to the virtual world? Can we not add long, boring meetings to the virtual world? Can we keep them effective and short and decisive?
Because make them more playful.
One of the key things. Well, make them more playful.
Right.
I'll tell you what's very strange. I'm sat in the real world on a chair, not unlike the chair that we're sitting at in the virtual world, and I've obviously got my foot on a table or something underneath this virtual table that I'm sitting at, and I can feel the leg with my real world foot of the virtual table, and I'm getting some very serious cognitive dissonance between being able to actually feel something physically that I know isn't there, but
right.
it does feel like I'm touching this table. And
what's happening in your eyes doesn't match there. Exactly what you're actually feeling.
Exactly.
Well, Aaron,
very interesting.
This has been, I'm going to say, eye-opening for me and Connor. I hope it's been ear-opening for the listeners. It is a big challenge to bring people in the podcast environment into virtual reality. I hope it's been an interesting experience. And certainly we also recorded this in video, so we will be sharing on YouTube so that you can see what we've been through here. So this has been an extra special and unusual episode of Discovery Matters. Thank you, Aaron, for being our guide, and thank you, Svitri, for being our NPC, if we could stick with that one.
But non-playing cameraman, I think that's what it's called.
Right, that's what it is.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks again. It was a pleasure. I'm glad you had fun. I'm glad you had some cognitive dissonance, so I can only... I'm glad you took something away from this. But yeah, Dottie, it'd be great to get you in front of a physical actor already, I think, at some point, and just check how much of that information went in just 5 or 10 minutes, right?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Learn by doing. Yeah.
Bye for now.
I'm staying here in Malibu. I'm sorry, folks.
Well, we saw, we learned, we installed.
That was quite fun.
And for our customers who want to give it a try, you can contact our team at Cytiva.com/VR. Let's keep kind of good etiquette, shall we, in virtual reality. Be as virtually kind as you'd like to be treated. Am I going to say it? IRL. Oh, I feel so young saying that.
Oh, I know that one. I'm not too old for that one. In real life. Thank you for real for listening. Discovery Matters is produced with the help of Beth Armit Brewster. Editing, mixing, and music is by Tom Henley and Banda Productions. My name, as ever, is Dodi Axelson.
I'm Conor McKechnie, both virtually and in the real world. Make sure you rate us on Spotify or whichever platform you use to listen to your podcasts. We'll be back with another episode of Discovery Matters soon.